You are listening to the INCJ podcast, conversations about international criminal justice. Hello, welcome to number 6 in a series called The COVID Leadership Challenge. I'm John Scott, and this is an INCJ podcast on YouTube. COVID-19 is presenting a unique challenge to frontline services all over the world, not just in health and social sectors, but in criminal justice as well. At INCJ, we wanted to find out how leaders internationally were handling the issues around COVID-19. So we've started a conversation with criminal justice organizations to ask about their experience of the crisis. Our hope is that in sharing answers, we will find solutions and fresh ideas. If you want to follow this series, you'll find it on our website at criminaljusticenetwork.net or on Twitter at INTCJNetwork. Now, let me introduce three people who together lead the ICPA. Now, that's the International Corrections and Prisons Association. So, welcome to Manon Bisson, Peter Severin, and Hans Maurice. Hello, everybody. Now, I think probably you should start by telling us where you're based and what role you have in ICPA. So if you unmute, because that's probably a good way to make sure we can all hear you, shall we start with Manon? Tell us where you are and what job you have, Manon.
Hi. Well, I am based in Canada and working from home since the beginning of the pandemic, and I am the executive director at ICPA.
Okay. Lovely to see you. You and I are both early morning, aren't we? The others will find out what time of day they are in a moment. So what about Peter next?
Thank you, John, and great to be here tonight. Tonight indicates I'm actually in Sydney, Australia, as you can see from my background. I'm the president of the ICPA, and I'm also the Commissioner of Corrective Services New South Wales here in Australia, which is the largest of the jurisdictions in this country when it comes to prisons and probation parole.
And are you at home at the moment, or are you in the office?
I am at home, but I have been working in the office throughout the pandemic. And fortunately, obviously, given the advantages we have as an island, we are actually, as far as community transmission is concerned, COVID-free in this country. So we are doing considerably better than some other parts of the world.
Yeah, and I guess we'd say it's a pretty large island.
It is a large island.
Yeah, welcome. And Hans, say hello to our listeners.
Hi, everybody. My name is Hans Maurice. I'm the actual vice president of ICPA. I'm normally based in Brussels. Actually, I'm in France. And I was for 12 years also Director General of the Belgian Prison Service. And together with Peter and Manon and others, we tried to, make ICPA better all the time.
Now, I want you all to imagine that we're around one coffee table. Now, that's pretty impossible, not just because of the pandemic, but also because the huge distances that we're covering. But we've got this opportunity, have we not, to reflect about what's been a unique 18 months, not just for the ICPA, but for the prison services and the organizations that you represent. And I'm wanting to talk a bit about the roles that you have, not just in ICPA, but your day jobs as well. So maybe let's start with you, Peter, because has it felt like a unique period in your life, and what impact has it had upon your day job?
Yeah, it certainly felt like a very unique period in my life, and both from a professional perspective, doing my day job, as well as being the president of ICPA, a global organization where all of a sudden you weren't actually able to meet in person anymore, and we had to resort very quickly to using technology. But from a prison administration perspective, as well as supervising offenders in the community, while we had pandemic experience with swine flu and like pandemics, and we had pandemic plans, we really didn't know anything about what this pandemic was going to present us with. So here in Australia, we're very fortunate. We had a very responsive government, and we very quickly moved into a quite substantial period of making sure that we took all the protective measures we could possibly take to keep the pandemic out of our prisons. And indeed, if we would have had to deal with anybody being infected by the virus, then we would have been able to do that in a very responsible way. So in many ways, we were fortunate in this country, but it wasn't just simply because we did anything better than others. It was also because we had really all the various elements that you need coming together, a government that was willing to be very proactive, a service that was very responsive, a community that didn't panic and didn't start to sort of try to undermine the rules. So in many ways, we're very compliant, which is not typically Australian, but overall, I think we did very well. I'll leave it to maybe Manon and Hans to talk a little bit more about what ICPI actually did in response to the pandemic.
Okay, so let's move to Manon then. How long have you been in your role in the ICPA, Manon?
Well, thank you. And in fact, I started as executive director last year in July. So during the pandemic, that being said, I was unable to meet the staff, my team, board members, colleagues, and stakeholders. So that was a challenging period to start a new job. And my role, in fact, is to I'm responsible of the leadership and the management of the organization according to the strategic direction that that is set by the ICPA board. So it was brand new for me, and I participated in the developing vision and the strategic plan to guide the association, as well as to manage the day-to-day effective and efficient operation of the association with my team. And previously, I was working for Correctional Service Canada for more than 25 years, mainly in institutions. And I started as a parole officer and then moved on to become a deputy director for 12 years in several men facilities. So when I started for ICPA, and at the time of the pandemic, ICPA responded quite quickly by facilitating a global dialogue. And we worked very closely with the United Nations on drugs and crimes, with the World Health Organization, as well as the International Committee of the Red Cross, where practical effort and support were made to see what we can bring to the table, and also practical engagements. So ICPA created a COVID-19 prison task force, and that comprised representatives from several countries with the aim of sharing knowledge and best practices in the field of corrections in times of crisis and looking at opportunities. In addition, the central response group that we put in place was also to open the dialogue with prison agencies, with their respective regions, assess where assistance might be required, and to support the exchange of information between agencies, and to provide guidance on initiatives undertaken by the association during the COVID-19 threat. You can find all those resources, very practical ones, in our ICPA website under the C19 page.
Was it a bit weird, though, starting in such an unusual time?
It was stimulating and challenging, as we could not rely on past experiences. So we had to adapt, innovate, and I think ICPA was quite agile to turn around very quickly.
Okay. I'm going to ask the other two the same question, but how did you get into corrections in the first place, Manon?
Well, I was where my background is I'm having a bachelor degree in psychology, as well as a master in business administration. And I was interested in the field of corrections. I had a coworker with a previous parole officer, and during lunch we were talking to each other. So I've applied, as my background was well suited for this work, and started as a parole officer, and then moved on to become the deputy director over the years.
You didn't read too many crime thrillers when you were young.
No, I did not.
I think we'll find that Hans probably did. Okay, Hans. So let's look at your experience from a Belgian perspective.
Well, first of all, I have to say, as a vice president, I'm very lucky to be able to work with Peter as a president, and Manon, and we forget also Diane Williams, who the four of us are the executive committee. And steering, let's say, on a permanent basis, ICPA. I think just like Peter, but he's some longer in service than me. I started my career in 1985 for the Justice Department, first as a criminal investigator for the Public Prosecutor's Office in Brussels, Ghent, and I worked nationwide and in Europe. And in the end of the 90s, I became a governor in the Ghent prison. Brilliant city. You have to visit John once. I think you did before. And then in 2006, becoming a director general, holding a master degree in criminology and public management. I always was interested in working internationally. And I've done that from the start with ICPA. And at that time, I was a board member. Then we shifted to other organizations. And since 2 years, I'm back. So as Peter mentioned, and also Manon, it is not easy to run such an organization virtually. But I have to say we managed well. I think Peter and I, we met physically for the last time, I think Peter, in February last year in Penta Hotel when we had the strategic planning meeting. Manon was even not there, so she had to plug in. So lucky us to have that experience of dedicated people in the international prisons and probation corrections to work together. And as Manon is saying, it's not easy to do that, but we developed a lot of things, and we were going to that deeper, I think, on virtual activities to take everything alive. So, yeah, that's what we have done. And it's not easy in Belgium, but perhaps like in Australia and in Canada, and like you, John, in UK, Ireland, we are lucky to have good connectivity these days to talk to each other on a fluent way. Without Zoom, it would be difficult. Lucky us, but I think we all expect to come back, hopefully, in the next months, next year, to physical contacts again.
What are the main changes you've had to make to ICPA, Peter, because of COVID-19?
And the main changes, obviously, were that we weren't able to meet in person. So ICPA traditionally has been an organization where the main event is an international conference that attracts about 600 delegates from up to 75 countries. And we come together at the end of October every year in some part of the world, and that's the forum where really the work is happening. And around that, we've got networks, we've got some task forces and other activities, but the conference is still the main event on an annual basis. So not having the ability to do that, as well as some ancillary conferences that we normally run, one in research, one in technology, for example, was a major impact. And we were very unsure how well our organization would do consequently to not being able to have our conference. I have to say, this is now, of course, a year, 14 months down the track, we've done exceptionally well. Now we have very quickly, like Manon was saying, moved into a task force combining all the energy and the knowledge and the wisdom that we could harness around the globe and assisting each other. We have immediately started virtual events, and we continue to do that. Hans certainly has been very proactive in that space and has done a lot of webinars and more recently a full conference together with some other people. And we're actually going to have our virtual conference this year. So last year we weren't able to do that. We had some learning academies which we continue. So we are really facing a situation where going forward, and we can talk about that in due course, we want to maintain a range of those positive experiences out of all the negatives to actually preserve the ability to communicate in a virtual environment to bring people together very quickly using Zoom, using other platforms, right through to actual virtual events that are more sophisticated going forward. Mm. But of course, we're desperately hoping to be able to come back together in 2022 and have our in-person conference because, again, there's no substitute for an in-person experience. Mm.
I asked the others how they got into corrections, so I need to ask you the same question.
Yes, so I'm sort of one that's worked in four different jurisdictions. I'm originally from Germany. My accent most probably gives me away. I started 40 years ago, almost 41, and came to Australia because my mother's Australian, so it's not all that spectacular. And I worked in three different jurisdictions here in Australia. In Queensland, which is we don't have a federal system, we only have state-based systems. And so in Queensland, which is one of our states, I worked there for almost 14 years. I worked in South Australia, where I was the Director General Commissioner. And now I've been here in Sydney, the head of New South Wales Corrections, for the last almost 9 years. I started off doing a degree in social work, but then I became a prison officer in the German system. When I came to Australia, never to go back into corrections ever. 3 months later, of course, I was very, very much back, and the rest is history. So, yes, I've been a jailer all my life.
Well,
my working
life. It's obviously in your blood. So let's look at what do you think have been the main challenges for prisons during the COVID period? Who would like to answer this? What about you, Hans?
Well, the main challenge, this is something we have discussed already internally as an ICPA objective. But being from Belgium and Europe, we have been lucky, and I've seen what's happening in Canada and in Australia too, in Manon, and Peter can plug in on that. We have been lucky to be able some 10 years ago to start looking to modernization from some technology issues. And in 2013, due to a master planning, in Belgium, we were able to be a kind of a front runner to change all kind of technology access for inmates. And today we can say this has saved a lot of troubles. As in Europe, we had different, let's say, wakes, tsunamis of COVID. And the first and the second one, we survived quite well. You know, we could keep it outside of prisons. But thanks to technology, now for the last 7-8 months, climate has stayed quite comfortable. You know, every inmate has a telephone on his cell, every inmate. We had access rooms for WebEx and Teams to have visits by distance. That made it possible to communicate. And the third big advantage in prisons was the telemedicine, which came into it. So we saw some, let's say, resistance really went away very fast. New mechanisms came into workflow, and I think this will be, and Peter can maybe more actively answer to that, that will be for us the main thing to streamline that. Because when we come back to normality, I'd say I don't think this year and not even next year, probably from 2023 complete, but that will then show how parts of the world like Australia, Europe, Canada, North America, and then we have to wait, of course, for the other parts, how they will deal with sustainable changes. Because one thing is for sure, John, we will not go back to what it was before.
Mm. Okay, perhaps Peter next.
Just imagine that from 1 week to another, there are total restrictions in place. Our prisoners cannot move freely, even within the prison, no visits, and a lot of measures, wearing of PPE and those type of things. There's a significant impact. And I'll highlight two things. Hans already spoke about technology, and it's absolutely true. The speed with which technology all of a sudden was able to be rolled out, and there was no political objection to any of that, was fantastic, and we'll keep that. Just one statistic. We've run in this state, we've got about 13,400 prisoners. We've run about 280,000 video visits since the pandemic started. So that's quite significant. And the anecdotes you hear about all after sudden, now the prisoners being able to see their dogs, being able to see the bedrooms of their children, those type of things, or indeed those who come from overseas. And we do have obviously foreign prisoners in our system who were never able to even be on the telephone, can now have a video visit with their loved ones wherever they are in the world. From an administrator's perspective, what was also really important was that we had the legislative ability to act very quickly. So I could have, in my particular situation, discharged prisoners who would have been vulnerable if the pandemic indeed got a foothold into our prisons. We were very fortunate, but we were prepared. I had legislation that allowed me to simply go from in-court appearances to virtual court appearances in every single occasion. Previously, we had a lot of virtual court appearances, but they were limited to short mentions and those type of things. Now we can do trials via video conference if the parties agree to do that, and the court certainly did. That's actually also been a very positive experience, and I have to say the courts reacted quite differently to what you normally experience with courts who are now very particular about their independence and what that means. So having significant restrictions in place and responding to it flexibly, but also ensuring that the workforce didn't resort to any kind of spontaneous reaction because of fear of not being exposed to the virus, etc., was really a challenge, but also an achievement, certainly in this country, and I know in most other countries, regardless of how the pandemic actually impacted. And it certainly did impact in some countries quite significantly.
Mm-hmm. Manon, can we perhaps think about how different countries have been affected? Because we've heard from Peter about Australia, which in many ways had managed to stay isolated, but there have been countries where COVID had got into the prison population, and my guess is some of your members have had very tough times in a prison setting. Have you had members share those experiences with you?
Yes, indeed. I mean, obviously, those countries were, you know, they were those prisons and correctional services that were overcrowded. It was difficult for them to medically isolate immediately those positive cases. So that was adding to the challenge. Sometimes not being able to stop the inflow or the intake and the transfers of inmates to prevent the spread of the virus. I would mainly talk for maybe Canada, which I have a little bit more experience since I was new for ICK, but I know that in Canada and the United States, they faced positive cases among staff and offenders and are still dealing with. And these correctional services established integrated risk management framework to guide their facilities to resume interventions, programs for offenders and services while keeping everyone safe. So it was developed obviously in collaboration with public health authorities, stakeholders, labor partners to establish the mitigation strategies for each activity. And the framework, what I would say, I think the challenge also was to how you manage institution having staff facing staff shortage while you still have to meet your legal obligations and mandate. By providing, let's say for Canada, the CSC has a legislated as a legal obligation to provide healthcare to the inmate, the essential healthcare to inmates. So this was a challenge if you're facing a staff shortage. And this was, I think, the same process all over the world and would point us to how you can handle. Some countries had better measures that they were able to put in place. We've seen some started developing their own protective equipment. Social distancing might be more difficult in some countries than others. So that's that was a reality. It was quite different.
Yeah. I mean, we have mentioned how hard it must be for prisoners to be separated from their families at this time. But also, my guess is that in poorer countries where there isn't such good access to technology, you can't use IT to overcome some of the barriers. So I think there's poverty or countries which are not as well developed. Imprisonment must be 3 or 4 times more difficult to during these times of COVID. Now, particularly, for example, in India, which must be experiencing the most dreadful ravages at the moment. Have you got any feedback about how their system is coping at the moment?
I might respond to that. So at the moment in India, it is obviously very dire. It's seriously bad. Interestingly enough, when the pandemic started, the Indian system coped relatively well. They had COVID in their prisons. They did all the things that we all did. You know, they locked down. I'm not talking about single cell lockdown. We're talking about now locking the prison down from the outside, no visits, et cetera, et cetera. They were able to contain it at a rate of lower infection than in the community. And that's an interesting phenomenon right across the globe, actually, that largely the infection rate in prisons was lower than that in the corresponding community, which is actually a sign that obviously social distancing, if you in some instances enforce it, where overcrowding is an issue, that's a different story, but it does make a difference. However, now it is seriously challenging because India is going through a period where they can't even look after their general population, and looking after the prisoner population is even more challenging. So the international support that goes out to India from mainly the Commonwealth countries and of nations, obviously, in the first instance, does focus on the general population. But the UNODC and the WHO and ICRC also really focusing on the prison population, other disadvantaged parts of the community. We also had some very dramatic experiences in parts of Latin America. ICPA continued to support the effort there, just to sharing information, sharing resources, sharing knowledge and ideas. And that really helped. If you go to the ICPA website, you'll find an endless source of things that we pull together from everywhere in the world that people can easily access and use for their own system. So certainly in developing countries and countries like India, it has been very different to the experience we had in most part of the developed world.
It's a really powerful point you make there about the concept of a community where international colleagues can provide intellectual resources as well as support. There is something dreadful, though, isn't there, about how the pandemic makes a difficult job even harder. And I'm wondering whether staff have been required additional support. I mean, I'm thinking of the well-being of prison officers who, in a way, are locked down in many ways with the prisoners as well. Has there been an increase in mental health issues for staff who clearly been having to manage their own health and risk just as much as the prisoners? Is that an issue across the prisons in different countries?
It is and it isn't. So there's an interesting phenomenon because life didn't change much for a prison officer going to work. You can't manage prisons on Zoom. You can't do a lockdown using a tablet. So you actually go to your workplace. And in many ways, that's been a mitigating factor in the context of your mental health well-being. However, as we all have experienced in our communities, the pandemic had an impact on your general well-being because of the fact that you weren't able to socialize, the fact that you weren't able to communicate in person, homeschooling for those families that have got children. So in the context of prisons, that's been exacerbated, particularly in countries where there was a prevalence of COVID in the prisons, because you haven't got a choice. You know, you can't actually, unless you don't want to go to work, in which case your job will come to an end at some stage, you really have to expose yourself to the risk of being infected. So the focus on the mental health and well-being of staff, as it would have been in other industries, has been strong, but it is mitigated by two factors. One is it is actually an industry that didn't go out of business, so prisons actually continue to operate. Now, not like some other parts of the economy that experience high levels of spontaneous unemployment, and the fact that your life, in terms of your working life, the routines were not too upset by the pandemic because you just went to work to do your shift, came home. However, that clearly is also, that effect is offset by the general effect that we experience in the communities generally.
Okay. Let me just move this conversation.
I can add something.
Okay, Hans, yes, please add something.
Yeah, just Peter, because you don't suffer from that, I think, too much in Australia, but in a lot of European jurisdictions, this COVID reduced overcrowding, you know, and you mentioned it before, and John will be interested in that. There was a shift from prisons to probation. A lot of prisoners were allowed to go earlier back to society without too much formality. And you noticed, well, after 1 year, some researchers started to investigate this. And you saw there was not too many incidents, frankly. So this was a really a paradox that people got out of prison a little bit earlier than they should be, without the whole process. And in fact, they were really accepted well, and probation did a very good job. The only thing we suffered from related to the business was all things around education and vocational training was really under pressure. This was really something which touched the population very hard. In terms of staff, Peter, custodial staff, like you say, custodial staff has to operate. Non-custodial staff, due to the good connectivity, social workers, psychologists, and other stakeholders were able to connect by Zoom, Teams, or Webex. So that went quite well. But finally, to maintain, let's say, a good climate, and I'm the lucky one, 3 days ago, I got my first shot, but since two weeks, all staff of Belgian prisons has now get under a flow of vaccination to be as soon as possible vaccinated. I think in Australia or in Canada, it might have happened already. But this calmed down really now for everybody, the stress, and figures are going down fast now. And we hope to get by early June to a very quite normal life again. So normalization from society will also, let's say, be for nearly 100% back, let's hope, by the early June. And I think for the main part of Europe, it's the same. Hmm.
Let's ask about what the lasting impact of COVID-19 will be on practice in prisons. Do you think things will go back to the way they were when that normality that Hans was talking about will return? Manon, do you think things will go back to being the same?
I would say not totally, because I think we introduced and embraced a new technology and the benefit of using technology. I think some of the work, teleworking as well, for those countries that were able to afford to having, you know, people working from home at distance, this is something that probably will remain or will be looked at. However, we still need staff in institutions or correctional services and prisons to deal with offenders and manage offenders and provide the interventions and the programs that their legal mandate force us to do. So I think it's a change, a paradigm shift, I would say, because the people will need to go back to working where it won't be as the back to the new normal or the normal we used to know. And I think we could benefit from using from the technology, and this is for sure. Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Peter?
Actually, I might start sort of from the beginning. You know, when this all kicked off, there was a very strong feeling that inertia will basically mean that once it's all over, which will be sooner rather than later, we'll just go back to the way it always was. And how wrong we were. So we always talked about it in the context of a response followed by recovery, followed by reform. And we responded, I think, as a global community, really well and effective everywhere in the world to the pandemic in prisons. The recovery is a little bit more challenging because that also includes vaccination programs, and we're in the middle of that. At the same time, the reform is what Hans was talking about, Manon was talking about, and we spoke about a bit earlier, and that is really maintaining those things that are important to be retained because they're positive learnings out of this. And it really comes through the learnings that we made in the context of communication, using technology to facilitate communication, but also from an ICPA perspective, communicating as a global organization in a very non-global physical way through using technology to connect us globally. So technology is the most obvious one, but I'd like to think, like Hans was saying before, that we also learn something, and interestingly enough, some countries in my region here, Indonesia and others, are actually looking at that very, very seriously. Now, the fact that we actually reduced our prison stock, the fact that we let people go out because of risk earlier, and the fact that that didn't result in chaos and in crime rates going through the roof teaches us a lesson in relation to using prison in a different way. And so Indonesia, for example, is going to legislate or continue to legislate some of these mechanisms going forward, which is very good because it literally acknowledges that the pandemic has taught us that we can actually decarcerate to some extent without increasing the risk to the community when we do that. So I personally hope that that will be an experience that a number of jurisdictions will make and will continue to embrace going forward.
So there are lessons for the whole system, which not just for the prisons, but also for legislators. I'm also interested in a way that Hans highlighted how the regime in prisons has been less rich because education and group work and that sort of contribution to the way that prisons are run has had to be cut down because of the pandemic. So what you've missed has also been seen to be important. I'm wanting to move again now to think about the three of you and your role as leaders. So what have you learned as leaders from the crisis? Let's perhaps start with Hans. What do you think leadership issues have been?
I think Peter can finish this session, but I think with ICPA we will try really to develop activities and into some workshops, conferences, or whatever webinars to contribute to what will happen after that. I think prisons renovation, new prisons planning and design will not be the same. As Manon said, technology will really change, game change, but also probation. I think the use of apps, all kind of new systems, electronic monitoring is really going fast to a new kind of technology to help inmates. And I think this will be an impact. And for the next year, there will be a lot of research. And we will work together with researchers on that. And I think this will be important for the next years coming up. But I think Peter can really have some contribution to this one.
Okay, Manon, lessons for leadership?
Yes, I think for me also, I would say as a leader in a new business, moving from the public sector to a nonprofit association. I think that without the capacity to meet my staff, the executive committee, the board members, program committee members and stakeholders, I think the challenge was to build virtual relationship and partnership. And this this is what we're saying. This is very important for an association. And it was also my challenge was to provide direct directions and guidance in an ever-changing reality while ensuring the wellness and well-being of my staff that is located in different countries. So I needed to ensure having regular meetings with them to make sure we build the team spirit and open up the communication channel. I would say for ICPA in general, I think to maintain our activities, we needed to change our work method, moving from in-person to virtual event. ICPA had to innovate and adapt to meet our objectives of enhancing cooperation and exchange of good practices in the field of corrections between its members, being public, private, and voluntary people sectors. So ICPA, as Berkeley mentioned, saw the opportunity to offer to its global corrections community a rich, diverse and unique learning experience by launching an online learning academy in November. And four sessions were held in 2020 that garnered more than 345 participants from 34 countries, where attendees could learn through a program of lecture presentations and interactive exchanges. And more sessions will be held in this June and over the year. And also as this part, I think we needed to bear in mind that as an international association, we where our attendees come from around the world, we needed to pay special attention to different time zones to maximize live participation. So this is something that was also challenging when developing virtual events, and we paid careful attention to this. And this also, as Peter briefly mentioned, and Hans, our recent virtual technology and corrections conference considered this important aspect in the program about time zones. And when we're going to do, we now are also in the middle of getting ready for our annual conference in October, which will also be done virtually using a new platform. So ICPA will continue, obviously, to offer a virtual event using a new platform that enables participants to interact, exchange, and discuss issues. And we also have like a digital infrastructure project that is under progress right now for the replacement of all existing base application used by ICPA for the management of our daily business. And it also includes the replacement of ICPA website, which will introduce new functionality. And this will help pursuing our activities.
Okay, right. Leadership perspective from you, Peter. What have you learned from the crisis as a leader?
I mean, I think the first thing I have to say that I've learned is do just not rely on what you know. This has challenged us in ways that certainly I could never anticipate. So the things that I knew were, yes, maybe a foundation, but no more than that. It was more important, I guess, than in most situations that I've experienced to be, as a leader, very clear and focused on the purpose of what you want to achieve and to be very clear about how to actually achieve that in a way that people can trust that you take their welfare into consideration while at the same time you actually continue to provide, in our case, community safety and security. And then I think Hans mentioned it, you have to be open for change. You know, you just need to really embrace the fact that the things you know are not the only things they are. And change is absolutely inevitable, as we always talk about and know. But when it comes to the crunch, this pandemic has really taught us that unless we're actually willing to embrace change and are open to change, we will not be effective as leaders. So that sounds a little bit motherhoodish, but I think there's a lot of truth in it. The last comment there is what I've experienced is as a leader is, again, also really able and be able and possible to just also admit when you don't know something, you know, when you actually seek for solutions yourself rather than try to doctor up some solutions that may or may not hold water. So, yeah, that's the core, sort of brief summary from my experience.
It's interesting, isn't it, that the word lockdown, which is all across societies around the world has been used, is a term that comes from the prison sector. And I'm going to end this conversation by asking whether societal lockdown has changed you as a person. So, Hans, do you think this very unique period in our lives has changed you as a person?
Well, you know, I'm now 37 years in the Justice Department, and I've seen different crises, John. And either with my earlier years in for the public prosecutors, this crisis has been really disruptive, and it will something that will have some influence for the next years, because we know that we might have next year a third shot of vaccination, so that means that for next year it'll still be there somewhere, but we have to be keen on change. And I think lucky us that there is ICPA, and I know there are other organizations worldwide who are also there, because we will need to share knowledge. It's also one of the themes this year for our conference in ICPA, share knowledge. And because you can't find out the warm water again, you know, this is something which is so overwhelming. And Peter, as an active commissioner, will certainly confirm it. And I think Manon has the same impression from Canada. It will be for the next years really important to really work together and to have the opportunities well focused, not to make mistakes, but really to do what needs to be done. And it's about leadership. And I think an organization as ICPA wants to contribute to leadership to make it happen and to avoid troubles again, wherever it is.
Mm-hmm. Has lockdown changed you as a person, Manon?
For sure. I mean, I think I realize even more the importance of maintaining physical and mental health and finding a work-life balance. And I think, you know, we're spending so much time working from home, staring at a screen, working on computers. And I think it's even more important to go outside and exercise, you know, and I'm looking in Canada. I mean, we have a lot of lockdowns and curfews, and now I'm seeing more people going out, exercising, walking, and I think that's a good health, practice and routines. I think that will remain, and I think it's also true for as a professional, as a leader, and as a person, and that's something we need to be careful of.
Peter, what about you? What have you learned in lockdown?
We were obviously very fortunate in my part of the world that lockdown was a very short period of time. In Sydney, we had about 6 weeks, and I wasn't affected by that because as a prison service, I was exempt for not, I was able to go to the office, and we worked from the office all the time. So in that regard, we didn't have to go through the experiences that my mom Hans was just describing. Personally, again, I think it's really important that realization for me, just don't take it for granted. You know, we do a service, we do it well at the best of times. Yes, we always under challenge. That's, I'm talking about being a prison administrator here. But now the uncertainty or the unpredictability of what might lie around the corner is certainly a lesson that I've learned to not underestimate. And so while we haven't had that effect that the European colleagues have and the North American colleagues have in other parts of the world of lockdown. Certainly, it's, looking at it globally, but also looking at it here, just don't take it for granted. And now, again, as I said, be very clear about your purpose, what you want to achieve personally and professionally. Let's hope that we will all be able to, like Hans said, stand at the bar and have a drink. At the moment, I can do that. We're allowed to go to bars and have drinks, but I would love to do that with my colleagues from ICPN.
Yes, but being envious of Australians is something that us British are very used to. We're going to sign off shortly, but I wondered if you'd got a word of advice for your prison colleagues around the world to say, to sign off with. Manon, do you have any advice you'd like to give your colleagues?
I think it is important to continue the communication, to communicate very well with all, I think, the stakeholders, be it prisoners, staff, family, relatives of prisoners, or any other stakeholders, mainly in times of the pandemic. It's very important. And since some jurisdictions and correctional services and prisons had some preparedness plan, maybe to review them, because we had some risk management plan, but I think they were not ready or enough detailed according to what we faced and the reality. So maybe to review them according to the lessons learned, where we can make them more develop and build updated according to the reality, that would be also interesting. Thank you.
Lots of wisdom in that. Hans, what's your advice?
Yeah, it's a unique period. Saying that I'm changed, well, depends on maturity in life, John. I think younger people have suffered maybe more. But I can't deny that, for example, terraces has been open now since a few weeks in Belgium, and in France you can also go now to the local cafe again. But that's on the other hand, that's personal. I think professionally, we kept well, I think, due to, let's say, mutual knowledge of each other. Since 20 years it was constructed, ICPA, this has helped us. As a person, for me, I think, I'm maybe an old crocodile, old-fashioned. I know what it is to be isolated. I have been everywhere in the world, and I did, even, and Peter will love it, I did my military service far away from my home in West Germany. At the time, I was also isolated from home. No, I just say that we just have to take care for each other, and it was maybe good to bring a bit. I know it's a wrong world today, but what I learned, discipline is not a word that you should forget, because of discipline, it was in Australia like this, it was everywhere like this, things went back to normal, and maybe we should remember this for the next coming years. That discipline in the way you behave for all kind of things could help us in staying healthy. And for the rest, I think, I hope it's nearly forgotten and going back to normal. I'm looking forward to see Peter again. And I've never seen Manon, so normally we should see when it happens next year, probably somewhere. And I think a lot of people, that's what I learned, even if that virtual thing is helping us to the system from this COVID, people want to see each other at the bar again to do something informally set up. And that will bring back normality, I hope, soon.
And the last word to the president?
Oh, thank you very much. I would like to actually thank correctional staff, administrators, leaders, officers, non-custodial staff for the amazing work they've done. I've been nothing but impressed, and our task force has highlighted a lot of that. And as have our webinars, and in many ways we've attracted more attention of staff who normally would not be able to actually make it to one of our conferences. So I think they've done an outstanding job, as have many, many other people in society, but obviously I'm more than pleased to be able to single out on this occasion our correctional colleagues right across the globe. Keep it up, and I think we are not at the end of this journey yet, but I think we've come a long, long way, and we could have done a lot worse than we have. and keep supporting each other. And if ICPI can do anything to support anybody out there in corrections land, we're more than happy to do that. So, and thank you, John, so much for the opportunity to engage in this dialogue.
Same as Manon, just communicate. There is somewhere always a solution available, and nobody will keep it hidden from each other. I think this has proven that collaboration and sharing is really the best thing to do. And I think that should be the bottom word for the next years coming up to and to share knowledge. And that's the thing we should do.
Well, to the people on the front line who perhaps don't get the recognition they deserve, the president of ICPA is saying a very big thank you. And I'd like to echo that as we sign off from INCJ. Thank you very much for listening. Please stay safe, and I hope that you can join us next time. Goodbye, everyone. And can I remind you that our podcasts are available on your normal provider, whether that's with iTunes or Google, under INCJ Podcasts. Goodbye. You have been listening to the INCJ Podcast, conversations about international criminal justice. Find out more, go to our website at criminaljusticenetwork.net or follow us on Twitter at INTCJ Network.